And finally, they're starting to fight back. So I see that as a good thing. And organized labor has to, not worry so much sometimes about whether those some of these folks that are out there need to be members of the union or not. They need to basically help them gain these wages and gain these benefits, and it'll come back to serve them well in the coming years.
I agree. I think this is really great that people are kind of stepping up and really starting to like dig their heels in and fight back, because I think it's going to lead to a really big shift. I mean, we're already seeing the shift in the movement, but I'm loving the fact that I'm seeing this shift, and I'm really seeing kind of like a rebirth of like the labor push from like, it's almost like switched from back in the day when we were at like the steel mills and the factory organizations and stuff like that. And now it's almost switching to the new norm, which is, you know, a lot of the retail and fast food and stuff like that. And
sure.
I'm really excited to see, you know, where this keeps leading as things go on, just because it's going to be an exciting fight. And I'm glad that we're a part of it.
Exactly.
And
you talked a little bit, I know we're getting short on time, but, you know, just the workers at Papa John's, the article you sent me this morning, just the idea that they stood up for themselves and got this class action suit started and are going to get, you know, some back wages, and I kind of hope this guy spends some jail time. That's a good thing.
I agree.
But,
and for
know, that inspires all every workers in every other restaurant to do the same thing.
I agree. And for anybody who's curious, that Papa John's article, we posted it on Facebook earlier. So come check us out on Facebook. Just look up The Union Edge. We've got the link there to that Think Progress article that they wrote about it and a little write-up about it. So check it out, guys. It is pretty interesting. And I'm glad to see, you know, workers getting another win here. But we've got to run, Buck. We'll see you again at 2:30 with your guest. And we'll talk to you soon.
Have fun, ladies. Good talking to you.
Alrighty, that was Buck Gino of Work in Progress Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman, and you've been listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.
I'm a loving the old lion, a winner without fail.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the PDX Leo Party, Friday, July 31st, starting at 8 p.m. at Kelly's Olympian. A birthday celebration for all you Portland Leos, with special performances from Sleep of Old Dominion and the Chicharrones, Mike Crenshaw, Smoke M2OD6, and many more. Again, that's the PDX Leo Party on Friday, July 31st, starting at 8 p.m. at Kelly's Olympian, located at 426 Southwest Washington Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
It's 6:32. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Prison Pipeline. And then at 8, it'll be episode 8 of The River Signal. Stay tuned for that and on a whole lot more coming up tonight on KBOO Portland.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. I'm Amy Johnson. Tonight, our topic is marijuana legalization in Oregon. We're continuing a conversation we started last week. On June 30th, 2015, the day before adult recreational use of marijuana became legal in Oregon, leaders of the drug reform movement held a press conference at the ACLU office in downtown Portland. They were speaking about why legalization matters, what to expect, and what's next for the drug reform movement. We will air the audio of this press conference. First to speak was U.S. Congressman Earl Blumenauer of Oregon, who has championed several federal legislative efforts to reform marijuana laws. He provided an update on efforts at the federal level.
This is an important landmark as we enter into the next phase of Oregon's legalization of marijuana. Our state has long been in the forefront of efforts to modernize and reform, starting with being the first state to decriminalize marijuana, one of the first with medical marijuana, and we think passing the best initiative of any place in the country. I wanted to talk just for a moment about the context of this in the national arena, because there's a great deal that is going on nationally, and the Oregon rollout is going to be watched very carefully in terms of its implications. Already in this Congress, we've seen over a dozen pieces of legislation, bipartisan legislation, introduced to further modernize marijuana laws. We have had six amendments already this session voted on the floor of the House, and four of them have passed. One of the most noteworthy by a significant margin, telling the federal government not to interfere with medical marijuana activities that are legal in the states. For the first time in history, we've had legislation introduced in the United States Senate. And we're looking at a number of other states watching what happens here in Oregon going forward. It's been a fast and furious activity at the federal level. The efforts are going to be concentrated going forward to be able to allow legal marijuana businesses to be able to have a bank account and to pay fair taxes. And both those concepts have broad bipartisan support, and we're confident that things that can happen in this Congress to make a difference. Part of the problem with over 5,000 legal marijuana businesses around the country is that we've got this crazy patchwork at the federal level, leftover vestiges of a failed policy of prohibition that simply don't work and dramatically complicate those efforts. I am extraordinarily pleased with what has happened at the state level, making progress to be able to refine the initiative that was passed with 56% of the vote last fall, coming together on a bipartisan basis. Anthony, just back from the state capitol, may talk a little bit about that. But I'm pleased because it's part of this momentum, being able to take what the voters have enacted, be able to refine it, move it forward, so that Oregon can be a textbook example of how to do it right. We're in the midst of a dramatic change all across the country. New states will be voting on it. The federal government over the course of the next 5 years will be modernizing based on what you've seen. And Oregon is going to loom large. I'm pleased we're here to be able to talk about that Oregon experience. And I'd like to turn, if I could, to Anthony Johnson, who is the director of New Approach Oregon and is the chief petitioner of Measure 91, which I think is the best initiative we've seen in any part of the country. Anthony?
Thanks so much, Congressman. As Congressman Blumenauer noted, Oregon has long been a pioneer in sensible marijuana law reform, starting all the way back in 1973, becoming the first state to decriminalize marijuana. And some breaking news today that I haven't seen covered just yet. Senate Bill 460 passed the Oregon Senate by the margin of 23-6. That will, if it's passed by the House as expected and signed into law by Governor Kate Brown, as I would expect, that would start the regulated sales of marijuana through existing medical marijuana dispensaries starting on October 1st. And so we'll even have regulated sales earlier than we expected, removing more marijuana sales from the underground or illicit market into licensed and regulated establishments. And starting in January, Oregon will start generating more revenue earlier than we expected under this system. So also today, the legislature further improved and reduced marijuana penalties and passed a bill that will allow for past marijuana offenses to be set aside in line with the new laws and to be expunged from their criminal record. So it's a great day for Oregon cannabis law reform. It's a really great day for cannabis law reform across the country because Oregon has helped lead the way for decades now, and we will continue to lead the way. And starting, you know, at midnight, we'll have thousands of less people arrested and cited for marijuana. We will better prioritize our law enforcement resources, and soon we will start creating new jobs in generating new revenue for our state that will pay for things that our state desperately needs: public safety, drug education, and substance abuse treatment programs and drug prevention programs to better keep minors from getting marijuana. And the new approach measure, Measure 91, legalization measure is not pro-marijuana, it's pro-regulation, and it supports people who want to succeed in society. There's no reason that we should saddle people with crimes on their record that prevent them from having good educational and employment opportunities, even volunteer opportunities at their kids' school or youth sports programs. And so to really touch upon that, we brought in people from all across Oregon, all walks of life, including mothers for Measure 91, who know that regulation, education, and taxation is a better system for Oregon's minors than prohibition in the black market. So on that note, I'll introduce Leah Maurer, who led our Mothers for Measure 91 campaign and has really been instrumental in bringing people from all walks of life into the fold to know that regulation is a better policy than prohibition. So next up, Leah Maurer.
Thank you. So yeah, like Anthony said, I'm a mother of three kids. Photos with me today, I'm so proud. Three boys. I have Mason, who's 10, Lyndon, who's 8, and Brennan, who's 3. So I love being their mother, and like Anthony said, marijuana is an issue I feel very strongly about as a mother, and for that reason I did fully support the Measure 91 campaign, and did in fact found the group Moms for Yes on Measure 91, which now has over 1,100 members statewide. I am also the co-chair for the Portland chapter of Women Grow. Women Grow is a national organization that has over 30 chapters nationwide, and the response that we've received here in Portland for this organization has been overwhelmingly positive. We've had two events so far that have both sold out a week before the event happened, and I feel really good about the work that we're doing with that as well. So like I said, marijuana is an issue I feel very strongly about as a mother. I love my children more than anything, and their safety is absolutely my top priority, as I would believe that it is for any parent. And that's why I'm excited that marijuana is starting to become legal tomorrow in Oregon. Under the current system, marijuana is very easy for children and teens to get a hold of. It's being sold everywhere. Under Measure 91, this system will be regulated. Where the marijuana comes from will be regulated. It will be tested. Who it's going to will be regulated. It will only be sold to adults. Under the current system, we have adults all over the state being arrested for possession of small amounts of marijuana. Under Measure 91, all those law enforcement resources will be freed up to focus on violent crimes and issues that I feel far more strongly about as a parent. Tomorrow, we're moving one step closer to a regulated system here, and people are being educated about it, and the black market will lose power. When retail sales open, the marijuana will be sold, packaged, labeled, and controlled, seed to sale, very strictly. But parents have a responsibility here too. Parents have a responsibility to educate their children. Just as we educate our children about weapons, cars, and alcohol, we have the responsibility to educate our children about marijuana. Marijuana is only legal for adults 21 and older, and it is unhealthy for children to consume. Today is not only an opportunity for us as parents to talk with our children about it, but also to talk with other parents about it. Measure 91 has given us an avenue as parents to have this conversation with each other and have the law as an ally as we walk this walk on this new market of retail marijuana sales. I'm going to turn it over to David Rogers, who's at the ACLU. Thank you again for having us.
With the passage of Measure 91 last November, the voters of Oregon sent a very clear message that we need to end the criminalization of marijuana. The aggressive enforcement of marijuana possession laws needlessly ensnares hundreds of thousands of people into the criminal justice system and wastes billions of taxpayer dollars nationwide. We are actually at the tipping point in regard to public recognition that the war on drugs is a failed strategy. Oregon is helping to lead the country in developing smarter and more just policy. And legalization of marijuana in Oregon is in fact about justice. The war on marijuana has been carried out with staggering racial bias across the country, and the same is true here in Oregon. Blacks and whites use marijuana at roughly equal rates, but blacks are more than twice as likely in Oregon to be cited or arrested for marijuana than are whites. And some areas of Oregon are worse than others. So black residents in Multnomah County are over 3 times more likely to be cited and arrested for marijuana. In Lane County, that's 3.5 times more likely. Sadly, we also know that arrests can often carry challenging collateral consequences that create long-term barriers to things like access to housing and employment. With the passage and implementation of Measure 91, Oregon can celebrate a racial justice victory and take satisfaction in removing some of the justice system's troubling collateral consequences that can ruin people's lives. Measure 91 was passed at a time when things were getting worse, not better. Oregon law enforcement agencies increased the rate of citations and arrests for possession of marijuana by 45% between 2001 and 2010. Oregon's increase during that period of time was the 5th largest in the country. And enforcement was not happening at a small scale. Between 2002 and 2012, Oregon law enforcement agencies made over 110,000 arrests or citations for marijuana offenses. In 2010 alone, Oregon spent over $50 million enforcing marijuana laws. To be clear, marijuana criminalization is not an effective public safety strategy. We are pleased to be freeing up taxpayer dollars for the kinds of strategies that are better designed to create and build safe and healthy communities. As Oregon implements Measure 91 and legalizes taxes and regulates marijuana, our state takes a giant step toward smarter justice. Thank you.
You are listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Amy Johnson. You are listening to audio of a press conference that was held at the offices of the ACLU in downtown Portland the day before adult recreational use of marijuana became legal in Oregon. Leaders of the drug reform movement are about to answer the press's questions about what to expect with legalization.
The big picture here is that there's dramatic change taking place on the federal level, and you're seeing it on the floor of the House. You have seen other states moving forward following Oregon's lead. We're turning a page starting tomorrow, as Anthony indicated, with a dramatic legislation, bipartisan support. We are suffering, and we have for years, with unequal application of justice. And if we look at some parts of the country, it's even worse in terms of the discrimination against young men of color. As Leah points out, it is totally ineffective, the prohibition, in terms of keeping it out of the hands of children who we all agree shouldn't use it, because nobody's going to check a license when they're down on the street corner or at a park.
Absolutely.
This changes it. And the notion of being able to focus our enforcement attention on people who would put it in the hands of our children and away from criminalizing behavior that most people think for adults should be legal, I think is a monumental step forward. And I'm proud that our state of Oregon is in the spotlight now, helping lead this change nationally. So we have some experts here that are willing, if you have any questions, we'd be happy to try and field them.
Congressman, the big problem is banking regulations help us. Are we to change that on the federal level so some of these dispensary owners can get a bank account?
Absolutely. The notion that we force thousands of legal marijuana businesses to be conducted on an all-cash basis is politely insane. Forcing people to have shopping bags full of $20 bills when they're just trying to pay their taxes. The risk for armed robbery, theft, assault, and if you really care about money laundering and tax evasion, forcing a business to be conducted on an all-cash basis is an invitation to them. But we're watching here bipartisan support, realizing that that is lunacy. There's building momentum in both the House and the Senate for this, working with the administration to try and see, go as far as we can administratively. But I think this Congress, we can pass that legislation. And while we're at it, the notion that they shouldn't be able to deduct normal business expenses, which any other legal business can do. Likewise, Grover Norquist, the Republican tax advocate, doesn't usually join me for press conferences. But Grover was there when we introduced our legislation because it's completely unfair and unnecessary. These are two things that people, I think, can get behind regardless of what they feel about marijuana. This is just common sense. And I think we're in really good shape to make progress on this.
In both Colorado and Washington, legalization for personal possession was legal for a year before regulated sales started in Colorado, and more than a year in Washington. So in many ways, Oregon is ahead of the game. But when you think about the testing, the labeling, the packaging, advertising, marketing, going from a medical system into legalization for all adults, there's just a lot of details we worked out, and I think Oregon has done a good job both legislatively and administratively through the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to go about it in a very sensible way to ensure that we have regulated sales so people have a place to go, but at the same time public safety is taken care of. So the OOCC has already started the rulemaking procedure, and it's really ramping up now that the legislative session is ending. They see how the bills are playing out. So the OOCC will even have more certainty as to how to move forward, but that process has already started. Early sales to medical marijuana dispensaries will still be regulated through the Oregon Health Authority, not the Oregon Liquor Control Commission.
Federal versus state, can you kind of narrow down what you're working on specifically?
Well, the idea is to make this seamless, okay. Is to make sure that the federal government isn't putting unnecessary roadblocks in the challenge that these folks in Oregon have in terms of having a new regulated above board industry. So things like the banking insanity, forcing it all cash, being unfair in terms of the taxation. Just this last week, we had the federal government remove an unnecessary restriction on research on marijuana. I mean, these are things that are being done unless and until we change the overall federal legislation, which I think is in the future, it's not in not the distant future, then dealing with these building blocks is important. But the Obama administration has been clear that they're not going to be interfering. They had a chance, they could have, they didn't. So I think we're making as much progress as we can with the tools that we've got. And again, the Oregon example is going to pave the way for allowing people to make even more progress in the future.
Anthony? Gus Bumlow from 420 Radio. With that HB 3400 compromise that allows the Eastern Oregon counties to ban commerce, are we going to end up in a situation where that 17% sales tax is only paid by Western Oregonians and it somehow benefits Eastern Oregon counties?
So under Senate Bill 3400, cities and counties that did not support Measure 91 with at least 45% of the vote can ban marijuana businesses without a vote of the people. Citizens will be able to gather signatures and reverse that decision and put it to a vote of the people. Until July 1st, 2017, the taxes collected for marijuana sales will be distributed through cities and counties across the state based upon population. But after July 1st, 2017, the tax revenue that goes to cities and counties will be distributed based upon how many licensees you have within your jurisdiction. So cities and counties that have banned marijuana businesses will not receive any tax revenue from marijuana sales after July 1st, 2017.
Hi, Doug McVeigh with KBOO Radio. The question about racial disparities in Colorado, we found by research that actually racial disparities are persisting after legalization, and in the case of cultivation, has actually gotten worse. Does ACLU or New Approach have any plans to monitor and evaluate how the state of Oregon does as far as enforcing the laws after legalization takes effect?
this is clearly an issue that we're concerned about, and we want to make sure that Oregon gets it right. Racial justice is a core priority and issue of the ACLU of Oregon, and absolutely, we will be monitoring the situation to make sure that, you know, we're moving forward in a way that isn't about advancing disparity, but really is about advancing equity.
Okay, we'll definitely monitor. You know, the legalization and implementing the regulated sales is just the beginning. And we've already seen the legislature now pass a bill through the House and the Senate to further improve marijuana laws and to allow expungement of past convictions that used to not be allowed to be expunged. And so over time, but we're not done yet. And there's still more work to be done. There's still people in prison. There's still disparities in how the laws are carried out. And there's still improvements to be made. So the work's not done. And part of doing that work is monitoring the state and how this law is carried out across the state.
How much does the state expect to save keeping misdemeanor and sometimes felony cases out of the court system?
Well, as David said, in 2010, the state spent $50 million on marijuana prohibition. So not all that money will go away, but I think we can expect to save tens of millions of dollars by better prioritizing our law enforcement resources and not having as many citations and arrests and prosecutions needlessly clogging up the judicial system.
We don't have good numbers. I mean, I've been looking hard at the research nationally. I'm convinced that it'll be more than $100 billion difference in 10 years if we get our policies right. But there are hidden costs. I mean, David pointed out a young man being arrested, getting athwart the law, doesn't handle it right. It can end up meaning if they live in public housing, they can't live with their family. They're not eligible for student assistance. I mean, these are things that have life-changing consequences that it's really hard to put a dollar figure behind. But I am convinced that all these estimates, once we drag this out the light of day, tax it, regulate it, get the policies right, I think it's going to have a profound effect financially. And that's just the least of it. I mean, that the effect on human lives, I think, is going to be very profound.
Regarding incarceration, how is that working with marijuana becoming legalized now for the people who are currently incarcerated, and what types of crimes would still end up in the criminal justice system with legalization?
Under new legislation, like we signed into law soon, people in prison could get their past sentences, which could be Class A or Class B felonies, reduced to Class C or Class C felonies or Class A misdemeanors. So that could have an impact on their prison sentence, also their length of probation or parole. So, and then under the new law, unlawful delivery within 1,000 feet of a school and unlawful manufacturing within 1,000 feet of a school, those will remain Class A felonies, so those could bring prison sentences. Other than that, most marijuana penalties will be a Class C felony at the most, or drop down to Class A misdemeanor. So I think we'll see a dramatic reduction in people facing prison sentences due to the new legislation. But as I stated, we are not done yet. There are still problems with marijuana law. I think Oregon voters spoke loud and clear that marijuana law should be much in line with beer and wine. And there's not many people going to prison for beer and wine offenses, so we still have more work to be done, and also the greater kind of drug war injustice of imprisoning people, too many people battling poverty, especially for nonviolent offenses. So there's definitely more work to be done, but this is definitely a great step in the right direction.
And what about children under this law who are found with marijuana? What would happen to them?
Measure 91 itself did not change the penalties for minors under the age of 21. Under new legislation passed by the legislature, some penalties that would be a felony would be reduced down to Class A misdemeanor, but it'll still remain illegal for minors to possess and use marijuana.
But it would be a felony,
For Class A misdemeanors.
Selling marijuana to minors still on the books?
Selling marijuana to minors is still a felony. Landlord-tenant law, employment law, those issues have not changed. Just as landlords can prevent people from smoking cigarettes in their apartment, they can prevent you from having a cat or a dog. So they will be able to still prevent people from using marijuana within their property.
You have been listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thank you to our engineers, Danielle and Mike. Good night.
Every Monday night at 8 o'clock, you can hear this voice alerting you that
you are about to cross the border.
And then follow the footsteps to a two-hour-long sustained environment of uninterrupted sonic art or new electronic, experimental, or postmodern music. Audio that breaks and rewrites the rules to create entirely new worlds of sound. Where will you be on Mondays at 8 when the door slams shut? Here on KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the MLK Dream Run, the weekend of August 1st and August 2nd. The 5, 10, and 15K runs will take you through the charming and historic retail, residential, and parkscapes of the Seoul District. The run and weekend events include music, food, and entertainment after the run and exist to honor Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, delivered in Washington, D.C., August 1963, during the March for Jobs and Equality. Again, that's the MLK Dream Run, the weekend of August 1st and 2nd at the corner of Northeast Martin Luther King and Alberta in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 7 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's episode 8 of The River Signal. At 8, it'll be a different nature.
The River Signal.
It's practically standing still.
The Mississippi is going down.